All right, so the economy is adding some jobs.
But is it adding enough jobs to speed up the recovery?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading the podcast from Marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, May 4th.
Coming up is more flooding in the picture for Midwest farmland. Portugal just hammered out a bailout deal that's a little different than the others.
And later, what not to do when playing softball with your coworkers. All that and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
There is a report out today that says the number of planned layoffs dropped last month to the lowest level of the year. About 36,000 job cuts were announced. That's according to the job placement company Challenger Gray and Christmas. And it offers economists an early look at the nation's job picture as we wait for Friday's big monthly employment report from the Labor Department. Let's dig into this morning's report and find out what it says about the job market with John Challenger. He's the CEO of Challenger Gray and Christmas, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, what does that number, 36,000 layoff announcements, tell you about the nation's job situation?
It's a positive sign. Companies just are not cutting many people. The reasons now seem to be more benign. Mergers and acquisitions, maybe a company that just really is faring poorly against its competitors, and then government. And that really right now is the core area of the economy that's experiencing deep job problems.
And do you think that this is a good enough sign to convince you that the economy is not stalling?
It's certainly one leg in that picture. We need the job creation. We've seen that now for two consecutive months, over 200,000. So you know if you're in a job, you're pretty safe. It's been tough if you've been unemployed to get back to work, but the picture does seem to be changing. This Friday's report will be very important to see if that strong job creation is sustained.
And finally, I noticed that your report finds the biggest places for layoffs, at least layoff announcements, are California, D.C., and New Jersey for the first part of this year. What does that tell you?
Those are harbingers of things to come. Think about all those areas. California has deep deficits. The government's cutting. Federal government in Washington has seen spending drop almost 8% in the latest GDP report, and that portends more cuts. New Jersey also is under an austerity campaign. We're going to see this on a continuing basis going forward.
John Challenger, CEO of Challenger Gray and Christmas, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Another employment gauge out this morning points to continued slow growth in the nation's job market. Private companies added 179,000 fewer jobs than expected in April, according to payroll service firm ADP.
Let's dig into all the job numbers now with Richard DeKayser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group in Boston who joins us now, as he does every Wednesday. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, first, what do you make of these numbers?
Well, you know, the ADP number was decent, but though not as good as it was the previous 4 months. The Challenger number for layoffs was good, lowest this year, but not as low as it was late last year. I think what it all adds up to is that we're going through a little bit of a slowdown or a soft patch, if you like. And just last week, the government told us, for example, that real GDP was up just at a 1.8% in the first quarter, and that compares with numbers around 3% in the fourth quarter of last year and for last year as a whole. So clearly there's been a slowdown. The question is it going to persist or is it temporary? And I would argue that we can point to a number of transitory special factors like the tsunami in Japan, heightened conflict in the Middle East, and higher energy prices.
Is it going to be enough? I mean, if we're going through this slow patch, is it going to be enough to give this economy what it needs?
Well, I don't think so. I think we're really on a modest growth trajectory. You know, in the 50s, 60s, even the 70s and 80s, economic expansions were doing 5, 6, 7% GDP growth in the first couple of years. But starting in the 90s, the new normal has been closer to 3%, and we seem to be on track for that at this point. It's okay, but it's certainly disappointing given our past history.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Sony today said it's hired outside help to clean up its video game networks. That's after a breach exposed personal data of more than 100 million account users. Now, Sony won't be at a congressional hearing today that's going to tackle online data security. And as Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports, Sony's absence will only increase calls to punish online companies who lose customer data.
Some lawmakers want to make companies use the latest technology to keep hackers out. But Carnegie Mellon computer science professor David Farber says laws can't keep up with technology.
I hate to see the Congress starts dabbling, saying that you must encrypt files. What do I encrypt it in? Strong encryption? What's strong encryption?
Farber says Congress should direct companies that lose sensitive data to automatically contact credit rating agencies. But Larry Poneman doesn't think regulation is the answer. He runs an online security research firm. He says consumers have choices beyond Sony.
I think the Wii and the Xbox will be preferred, all things being equal, simply because of the data breach.
The market, he says, will punish companies that lose data all by itself. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The country's largest cable company, Comcast, which now owns NBC Universal, made almost $1 billion last quarter. That's up 9% from the same period last year. Now, Comcast says it lost 39,000 video subscribers, but it added almost 500,000 internet customers.
AOL said first quarter profit tanked, blamed on fewer ads and less money coming in from subscriptions. China's largest social networking site, Renren, delayed its initial public offering until today, but it didn't say why. The IPO could bring in more than $500 million. The world's biggest cereal maker, Kellogg, this morning said its first quarter profit fell 12%. Apparently, that Special K is not so special. The reason? Higher costs for ingredients such as wheat and dairy.
For more numbers, you can go to the numbers section anytime at marketplace.org.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. European leaders today said Portugal could get more than $100 billion in loans from its neighbors. Now, if that rescue plan goes forward, it'll be the third European bailout in the past year. Greece and Ireland got help too, you'll remember. But Portugal's rescue package is a little different. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is en route to Portugal, and he joins us now. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So what is different about Portugal's bailout?
Well, we don't have all the details, but it does appear to involve less austerity than the Greek and Irish packages. For one thing, Portugal's been given an extra year to cut its deficit. Interestingly, this softer approach comes at the urging of the IMF, of all people, usually the tough cop in these bailouts. But Professor Dominic Swords of the Henley Business School says the IMF now thinks too much austerity would depress the Portuguese economy, that it's vital to keep Portugal growing.
If you've got a buoyant economy, you are generating revenue, you're getting income month by month, you can get tax from that revenue to finance the things you want government to do.
And, of course, to pay off government debt. The EU and the IMF do seem to have decided that it may have been a mistake to crack down too hard on Greece and Ireland.
All right, Stephen, so is this kinder, gentler bailout approach going to solve the crisis then?
Well, the public sector unions in Portugal don't think it's kinder or gentler. They're still pressing ahead with an anti-austerity national strike on Friday. And on the wider Eurozone debt problem, there's still a lot of trouble brewing in Greece with a lot of talk of possible default there. So no real end in sight yet for this seemingly never-ending crisis.
Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Now to the world's largest commodities trading company, Glencore, which announced today that when it goes public, it could be worth more than $60 billion. And some of the early investors in Glencore will be governments, like governments of Abu Dhabi and Singapore. Reporter Christopher Worth tells us why those governments have an interest in Glencore.
Abu Dhabi has a lot of cash lying around. It's an oil-rich nation, and oil prices, you may have heard, are pretty darn high right now. So Abu Dhabi wants to take its extra money and invest it in a place where it can earn a decent return. That means it has to set up a so-called sovereign wealth fund, something a lot of countries do. Rupert Nathan of the stock research firm Fat Profits says that Abu Dhabi's sovereign wealth fund is making a good bet by buying into Glencore. Glencore's core business is trading in metals and agricultural products.
Part of the very basics of any investment strategy would be to achieve diversification. So if the bulk of my revenue was coming from oil, I'd be wanting to sort of diversify away
Andy says given that Glencore's stock is expected to start selling at a relatively low price, sovereign wealth investors like Abu Dhabi view it as a steal. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
This week, we could see average gas prices across the country top $4 a gallon. That is a dollar more than just 6 months ago. Well, to most people, that's a big deal. But how much do those incremental increases really cost us? Marketplace's Jennifer Collins took a ride to find out.
If you're upset about gas prices in your part of the country, welcome to Los Angeles.
Okay, I just filled up my gas tank. It's $4.29 a gallon. My total comes to $44.25.
Ugh. John Gorville is a marketing professor at Harvard Business School.
You know, the idea of spending $40, $50, $60 at the pump seems outrageous.
But let's do the numbers. The average driver fills up about once a week. So every time the price of a gallon of gas goes up a dollar, it costs an extra $10 to $15 to fill the tank.
So I think the actual increase is less than people's response to that increase. And I think it's because with gas prices, it's right in your face.
He says the huge signs at the gas stations keep us thinking about gas all the time. Well, most of us anyway. Michelle St. Germain is a professor at Cal State Long Beach. She's been driving 300 to 400 miles a week for 16 years. She stopped looking at gas prices years ago.
I'm going to buy it anyway. I mean, I suppose if I drove up and it said $50 a gallon, you know, I might be really outraged, but you know, it just goes up a little bit, and I just don't even notice it.
St. Germain's secretary Kathy Allen puts the price of gas in practical terms.
I guess it's, you know, two days of lunch.
But has she started brown bagging it?
No. Sorry.
Professor Soren Anderson at Michigan State University has an explanation for that.
If the reason the prices are getting high is because people are doing better and wanting to buy more oil,
in other words, the economy is improving,
then they might not feel like they're worse off.
But for people who aren't feeling the recovery, the increase can sting, and some do cut back on their driving, creating what may be one of the very few benefits of higher gas prices.
Right, it's a lot easier to find a parking space.
That's St. Germain as she pulls into a front row spot. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, if you think $4 a gallon is bad, consider this. USA Today is reporting that some rental car companies are now charging people $10 a gallon if they return the car without a full tank of
gas. I saw that actually last week when I was in Alabama at the rental car company, and I thought to myself, it was like nine and some change.
Yeah,
that's right. Wow!
That's why I always return it full.
Yeah, you have to.
The Army Corps of Engineers says more levees along the rising Mississippi River may need to be destroyed in order to divert water to farmland so it doesn't flood cities. Earlier this week, you may remember the Corps blew a hole in a Missouri levee to save Cairo, Illinois from flooding. And the soggy spring in the Midwest could soon impact the price of corn. Marketplace's sustainability reporter Sarah Gardner explains.
Spring rains and floods have left much of the nation's cornfields a soggy mess. Farmers in the Midwest are worried they'll miss the traditional deadline for getting their seeds in the ground and wind up with a measly harvest.
There's kind of a magic deadline in the Midwest for optimal planting time, and it's about May 10th.
That's analyst Jason Ward at North Star Commodity in Minneapolis. He says if cornfields in key states like Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa don't dry out this week, it won't just be a problem for farmers. Corn supplies are the tightest on record, and consumers would feel the pinch too.
They would see higher milk prices, they would see higher beef prices, higher pork prices, and ultimately higher chicken prices.
If warm, sunny weather doesn't settle in soon, some Corn Belt farmers may switch over to soybeans, which can still be planted in June. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Well, just west of Minneapolis, where I-494 meets Highway 169, they're taking down the stoplights and putting in a roundabout.
A roundabout, also known as a rotary in some parts of the country, or a traffic circle. This is just the latest example of a growing trend in suburbs around the country where the goal is to cut down on traffic congestion as well as accidents. And as Tony Arnold reports now from Chicago Public Radio, one village in Illinois is hoping a new roundabout will serve as the cornerstone for new commercial development.
When you hear the word roundabout, you might think of a huge multi-lane traffic circle, the kind Chevy Chase gets stuck in National Lampoon's European Vacation.
It's amazing. I cannot get left. This Big Ben can't Parliament.
But the recipe for a typical roundabout these days is a little different. Take an average four-way intersection. Insert four yield signs, add a round patch of grass in the middle, and voila. Over the last 20 years, about 2,500 roundabouts have cropped up around the U.S.
I'm Amy Connolly, planning director for the Village of Tinley Park.
Connolly's been given the task of developing Tinley Park for the foreseeable future, and part of that future includes a new roundabout funded by a $2 million grant. It's planned for an intersection meant to connect drivers from the nearby highway to the downtown area. Connolly says it'll help clear the traffic jams that clog the intersection now, and she says it will allow construction of a new commercial development without adding extra congestion. It's also intended to make the area more pedestrian-friendly.
We sort of drive on autopilot these days, but things like roundabouts really force you to sort of slow down and think about what you're doing, and that makes for a safer intersection.
On a recent afternoon, Connolly drives me to South Holland, two towns over. There we find a model for the Tinley Park roundabout. She says municipalities like roundabouts because they cut down on the electricity costs of running stoplights, and insurance groups show there are fewer serious accidents. But the real trick could be getting local residents on board. Dave Burke lives by the South Holland roundabout and is unimpressed.
It doesn't slow the traffic down. Nobody knows how to use it.
Not unlike Chevy Chase, who needs a whole day to finally figure out that traffic circle in London. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, with warmer weather comes more outdoor corporate camaraderie, like the company softball team.
Oh, yes.
Aren't you ready to play ball?
Do we have a Marketplace softball team?
I don't know
if we do.
I don't think so, and I'm not sure that I want to play on it anyway. The Wall Street Journal sports columnist Jason Gay has some do's and don'ts for those who do take to the diamond.
Uh-huh.
All right, you want to hear this?
Yes.
Keep your special expensive bat at home is... Your ego that big that you have to bring your own bat? Really? You have to bring your own bat? Yes, they do, Jeremy. Yes, they do. Maybe don't bunt, you know? I mean, think about it.
That's a party foul.
That never turns out good.
Yeah, that's right.
And for goodness sakes, don't keep any statistics. I mean, really, nobody cares about the stats of the game, except maybe your boss, who you let slide into home for that game-winning score.
I would love to know
just to suck up just a little bit,
Yeah, I don't want to hang around with the person who keeps statistics for the company.
Where would you put it? What file would you put that in?
File 13 is where I would put it. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.